Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I talk about the upcoming Fat Studies Conference here in Wellington, New Zealand. I chat with Heather from Fat Girl Posing, and I spotlight a blog from Dances with Fat about fat patients and their doctors. On July 12th and 13th of this year, 2012, I'm hosting a conference through Massey University, my host university. The conference is Fat Studies, Reflective Intersections, and it's taking place at the Massey University campus in the capital city of Wellington, New Zealand. I'm very excited about how things are shaping up for this conference, and calls for abstract submissions recently closed. The conference committee have been reviewing the abstracts we've received, and it looks like we're going to have an amazing conference. Our keynote speaker, who's been on board since the beginning, is Dr. Samantha Murray from Macquarie University in Australia. Other great speakers that we've got lined up include Dr. Anne-Marie Jattel from Victoria University and Robin Lunghurst from the University of Waikato. We're super excited about the variety of presentations we expect to find, including one by Dr. Patty Watkins, who's coming all the way over from the United States to talk about best practice and succeeding in teaching fat studies classes in the university. The event's shaping up to be 2 days of fatlicious scholarship, activism, and art. And I encourage everyone who's able to make it to Wellington for the conference to come. Registration costs have been set quite low with $100 at wage and $60 for unwaged. And you can find all of this information, including online registration, at the conference website, fs2012.massey.ac.nz. I really do hope to see lots of you there. We're also looking into providing an online registration option at a reduced fee that would allow people to log on securely in order to participate in the conference real time. If you've got any questions, you can email the conference committee by emailing fs2012@massey.ac.nz. Today is Heather from Fat Girl Posing. Heather, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Maryland.
Thanks for having me on.
So I've been a fan of your work for quite a while, but I appreciate there might be some listeners out there who aren't familiar with your blog and with the work that you do. So can you just kind of introduce them to what you're doing?
Sure. So I got into fat acceptance about a year ago, and I decided to start trying to model locally. And so Fat Girl Posing is basically my journey as a fat person in the world of modeling.
Were you interested in modeling before you got involved in fat acceptance?
I was. I was interested in modeling at least since high school, but I always thought that I was just too fat to do it, even plus size modeling.
And so it was kind of being introduced to the ideas and the fat acceptance and activist movement that kind of shifted your thoughts?
Absolutely. I decided almost immediately, as soon as I read Lessons from the Fatosphere by Kate Harding and Marianne Kirby, that I wanted to get into it, that was something I really wanted to do.
I love that you bring up specifically that book, Lessons from the Fatosphere, because I think that for a lot of people, that book was really, you know, it really kind of resonated. I know that for me, the kind of book that set me down that in terms of fat activism was Marilyn Wand's Fatso.
Lessons from the Fatosphere really, I would say, changed my life. Before that, I was struggling with an eating disorder, having obvious body issues, and a great non-judgmental friend just recommended the book. I read it, I got angry, and after about 2 weeks, the information just kind of soaked in, and I just had an aha moment, and I just completely turned around and said, yes, this is what I want to do now.
So introduce us or kind of tell us about how that journey first started in terms of you have that aha moment and you go, you know what? I've always wanted to model. I'm going to go for it. How did that start? How did you get started?
Well, I basically posted on Facebook, you know, I think I want to find a fat-friendly photographer. And a friend of mine pointed me towards a website, modelmayhem.com, and said, here, why don't you sign up for this? So I did. After that, I joined a couple of photography groups and, you know, got into some classes and workshops. But I really started on Model Mayhem, and I'm still on Model Mayhem. That's where I found a lot of my work.
What was the experience like? I mean, the first time that you modeled as a fat girl, was that exciting? Was it scary? Was it liberating?
All of the above.
Yeah.
Working with a photographer one-on-one is a little bit easier because you know that they're there for you and that they want to shoot with you. When I started doing classes and workshops, it was definitely a lot harder because I would get looks from some of the photographers. I would get the people who tried to avoid me, tried to focus on the other models, and, you know, just kind of ignored me.
How did you handle that?
I think I handled it fairly well.
Yeah.
I mostly just pushed myself into the spotlight and said, you know, okay, I'm here too. I'm ready. You know, I just change outfits. Who wants to shoot me now? Or I'd go up to somebody and be like, excuse me, have you shot me yet? Would you like to? So I had to be really in your face with a lot of people.
How, you know, in the process of kind of shooting you and then looking at your work as a model, what kind of feedback do you often get from photographers?
From photographers, it really just depends. The people who obviously didn't want to shoot me to begin with, I just never hear back from them.
Mm.
Other people, you know, people who obviously love me and want to shoot with me, or even the people who are a little bit indifferent, generally tell me they love my work, they love what I'm doing, they love shooting with me. I usually have a card that I give to people and I explain to them a little bit about my blog and what I do. And most people, especially women photographers, are really, really on board with it.
Why did you decide to kind of chronicle your experiences with this through the Fat Girl Posing blog?
You know, I don't know. Writing is just something that I've always kind of done from being in high school or even middle school and writing horrible, gothy, angsty poems. And just always something I really love to do. So it just seemed natural when I started doing this to also start writing about it.
And what kind of response do you get from the people who read your writing or who follow your blog?
Well, I have fans and not so much fans. From my not so much fans, I get the usual death threats, fat jokes. I've had my work posted on other parody blogs and made fun of. But, you know, I don't mind that so much because the other responses I get are ones where people are inspired and I really help them. I last summer did a bikini shoot. It was my first year wearing a bikini, and I decided I wanted to shoot that. And I had so many people email me and say, I bought a bathing suit for the first time this
wow.
year. Or I bought a bikini for the first time this year and actually went out in public.
I think that's one of the most amazing things about being a fat activist in the sense of, I mean, obviously, like you getting comments from people saying, you know, I saw that you did this and it gave me the courage, you know, it helped me find the strength in myself to go out and buy a bathing suit.
Oh, absolutely. It makes everything just worth it.
Yeah. I like that. Well, so what would you say then to the women, both fat and not fat, who are listening to the show, who've always been interested in being a model or been interested in getting into that kind of line of work, but just assumed, oh, my body's not right or my body doesn't look like these people?
I would say, first of all, that nothing is guaranteed. There are some people who are going to love you, some people are going to hate you, some people who are going to want you to model, and some people who aren't. The industry has very specific standards, but if you work really hard and you're really in a lot of people's faces, you can push through that. And even if you fail, it doesn't matter. You should go for it anyway, because you should always try to follow your dreams regardless of what the result is.
So do you have any like specific things that you're working on at the moment?
I am working with a photographer who I worked with in the past doing a couple of artistic nude shoots. We did some studio work, and we're going to soon be doing some outdoor work. He's doing a great project on how nude modeling is viewed throughout the world.
Oh, wow.
And that's Dan Smith, photosmith.com. And I've got a couple other things lined up. Somebody wants to do a witchy, gothy type shoot, and I've got a great cupcake dress that I got from dominodollhouse.com that I wore for my birthday party, and I'm working on a garden party shoot.
Oh, wow. That sounds really cool. Where can people go, like, if they want to see the work that you've done and, like, see your shots? Is there somewhere they can go online to see all that?
Well, there's my blog, of course, fatgirlposing.blogspot.com. And I've also got a Flickr, which I link to through my blog. On the side, it says more, and you can get to my Flickr through there and see all of my photos, even the ones I don't post on my blog.
So what do you hope? I mean, like, is there kind of not necessarily like an end goal that you're working towards, but is there like a goal that you've got in mind in terms of, I really want to make it here, I really want to be able to do this?
You know, I'd really like to get into fashion modeling. You know, I really love Tess Munster, who does modeling for Domino Dollhouse. And she's a size 24, and I think she's just absolutely fabulous. But, like, my big, big dream would probably actually be doing, you know, doing the runway.
Okay.
You know, they've, like, Beth Ditto.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome.
I want to be a diva. I want to inspire people.
Yeah, no, I think there's a lot of us, and myself included, who's like, when I grow up, I want to be just like Beth Ditto. That's awesome. Well, Heather, thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me.
I think that, you know, you definitely bring a point of view that a lot of people probably haven't ever really considered before. You're definitely the first fat model that we've had on Friend of Maryland, so I appreciate you kind of breaking that new ground with us. And hopefully people who are interested both in your work as a fat activist but also in your work as a model will go check out your blog, Fat Girl Posing.
Well, thank you so much. I'm honored to have been on.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you later.
All right.
Spotlight today is a piece from Dances with Fat, one of my favorite blogs. The blog is written and maintained by Reagan Chastain, and this piece is entitled For Fat Patients and Their Doctors. Quote, two patients have high blood pressure. One is thin, one is fat. The thin person goes to the doctor and receives recommendations for interventions that, evidence shows, are likely to lower blood pressure. When that person goes back for a checkup, the doctor will test their blood pressure to determine if the interventions are working. The fat person goes to the doctor, and there is a greater than 50% chance that the doctor will view them as awkward, unattractive, ugly, and noncompliant, and nearly 30% chance that the nurse will be repulsed by them. The doctor recommends weight loss to cure the high blood pressure, but does not tell the person that 95% of the time people gain all of the weight back within 5 years, or that some methods of weight loss are likely to make the high blood pressure worse. The doctor also doesn't explain that weight loss is not guaranteed to lower blood pressure, even if they are in the 5% who successfully maintain weight loss. Rather, they tell the patient that everyone who tries hard enough can lose weight permanently. When the patient goes back for a checkup, the doctor puts them on the scale to test their progress. There are a few issues to explore here with respect to the doctor's behavior with the fat patient. The first is the concept of evidence-based medicine. Based on the evidence that we have, there is no reason to believe that this patient or any patient can lose weight long term. Often doctors try to explain this away by citing the evidence of correlation between fat and various diseases. But being fat is so bad that you should try to lose weight no matter what the odds. It does not matter what issues fat is correlated with, because we don't know how to make people thin in the long term. Saying that we do is a lie, whether it's intentional or not. If your doctor tells you that weight loss works, ask her or him to produce a study where a majority of participants were able to maintain a weight loss of the amount that he or she is recommending for you for 5 years or more. They will not be able to do so. Prescribing weight loss has no efficacy basis in evidence. The second is an issue of diagnostic criteria. When we use weight as a stand-in for health, we are putting a middle person where we don't need one. We can test a patient's blood pressure, give evidence-based intervention to lower it if it is too high, and then test the blood pressure again to see if the interventions are working. It doesn't make sense to prescribe a body size intervention for a health problem. Prescribing weight loss for high blood pressure is like prescribing weight loss to cure cancer. The difference being that weight is simply a body size and cancer is a disease, but it still makes an apt comparison in terms of the way that they are both used in modern medicine. Although we are aware that the treatment for cancer often leads to weight loss, we don't tell cancer patients that weight loss will cure their cancer. When they come in for checkups, we don't weigh them to measure the efficacy of the treatment. We understand that with cancer interventions, weight loss is a side effect. It's the same with treatment of high blood pressure, diabetes, etc. It's possible that the behavior changes that are recommended for disease intervention will lead to a change in weight, but that's merely a side effect. It's typically temporary, and it's not a proper diagnostic criteria or efficacy test. The third issue is of informed consent. Going back to the cancer example, a doctor can recommend a risky procedure to treat cancer. They must tell the patients the odds for success as well as possible side effects and what happens if it fails, and give the patient a prognosis. They do not tell patients that anyone who tries hard enough can beat cancer. They also have to let them know if there are other options. Then the patient makes an informed decision. A doctor can prescribe weight loss, but informed consent would require that they let the patient know that it only works 5% of the time, and that includes people who are only trying to lose a few pounds. When we talk about dramatic weight loss, the figures drop even lower. They also have to let them know that there is a great deal of evidence that shows that healthy habits lead to healthy bodies regardless of weight. They cannot correctly tell the patient that anyone who tries hard enough can lose weight. That's not supported by the evidence. They should also inform them that these diseases happen to people of all sizes, but that patients of lower weight who present with the same symptoms are given a different treatment plan and explain that plan as an option. Their fat patient may now make a truly informed decision. Your doctor may not be making these mistakes intentionally. He or she may not know about the studies that I am referencing here. All the same, the evidence is there, and we trust doctors to be working from the principles of evidence-based medicine, proper diagnostic criteria, and informed consent. We should be able to go to the doctor with the expectation that they will not make these mistakes, but that is not the situation in which we find ourselves. So as my friend Daryl Roberts is fond of saying, we must be the CEOs of our own health. Or as I am fond of saying, we must be the boss of our health underpants. If we are to get good health care, we must be informed and steadfast in our requirement that doctors treat us based on evidence. Most versions of the Hippocratic Oath include a phrase to the effect, I will not be ashamed to say, I know not. If your doctor is still making these mistakes and is surprised to hear about this research, then now is the time for them to invoke that. End quote. Closing the show is the March 4th Marching Band with Dynamite.